Hey guys, welcome to episode 188 of The True Crime Couple. I'm Kay.
And I'm John.
We hope that you're all doing well and are excited for another episode. Like always, we want to thank you for listening and anything you've done for us. Whether you followed us on social media, left a comment, liked a post, or left us a review, or joined Patreon. You guys are amazing and we love you so much. We especially want to thank our new supporters on Patreon. And it's because of you that we can keep doing this show. You're our true producers. So if you're new to Patreon, we'll be thanking you at the end of this show, so stay tuned. If you'd like to get ad-free episodes and two full-length bonus episodes a month, you can join at patreon.com/truecrimecouple. And just one more thing, then I promise I'm done. We have our listener episode coming up in October, so we would love for you to send in your stories. Whether they're paranormal, related to true crime, or just plain weird, we want to hear it. And, oh, wait, I'm sorry. There is one more thing. I lied to you. I just want to talk about ads really quickly. Recently, we got some bad reviews saying the sounds of our ads are really loud. So I just want to kind of explain that a little bit. We always choose to do the ads in which I read them. We've tried to let John read the ads, but it didn't work out too well.
It doesn't work, guys. Sorry.
So that's the ads we choose to do. But after 60 days, those ads get replaced because the codes and stuff, they don't work anymore. So we don't get to choose what ads get put in that place. And we also don't have control of the volume of those ads. So we apologize. We know that sometimes they could be really loud and we're so sorry. We're trying to ask to see if they could get lowered, but I just kind of wanted to explain that side of the podcasting world to everybody.
Yeah. It's a little strange. They inject those ads into those slots that previously had ads on them, you know, in that area.
That we read.
Right. And then it just seems to be like, you know, these like generic kind of ads. So they're just really, the volume's extremely loud.
So we apologize. We know some of you listen to us while you're going to bed. So sorry if we wake you up.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
So, John, are you ready to hear something crazy?
Yes, I am.
In today's case, I'm going to tell you a story of a beautiful family. Our married couple, Frank and Charlene Renick, like many of us, started with the best intentions for their two unique and thriving boys. But, like all of us, the complicated interpersonal dynamics and the pressure of money and day-to-day life slowly overtook them until they seemed to only be a shadow of the people that existed in the happy, smiling family photos that lined the wall of their beautiful farmhouse. But unlike most of us, this story ends in utter tragedy. As someone within these complicated dynamics would be murdered.
Police say the suspect, 31-year-old Jeffrey Dahmer, has confessed to the killings of 11 people whose remains were found in his apartment.
We are all evil in some form or another, are we not?
Lock your doors, lock your windows. If you have the ability to provide additional security devices, then by all means do so.
In 1987, Frank and Charlene Renick were the proud and excited parents of two boys, Sam, who was two, and Ben, who had just been born. They wanted their sons to be close, and the fact that they were born 2 years and 2 days apart was perfect, because the couple knew for the rest of their lives that they would be able to celebrate their birthdays together. Their other goal was to raise their sons in nature, just as they had grown up. And by that time, they were close to realizing their dream. Frank's father had owned a feed company, a rather famous feed company called Bow Wow, obviously mostly known for dog food. In fact, they had been the first company to bag their dog food and sell it at Walmart, making it more accessible to consumers in the 1960s. When Frank took over the company, he chose to sell it in order to make his and his family's dream a reality. With the proceeds of the money, he did two things. First, he created a new business called Renick Farm Pet Foods, as he wanted to expand the products that were offered through the company. And secondly, he bought 72 acres of farmland in Montgomery County, Missouri, near the town of Florence. It was on that property that he intended to build a beautiful farmhouse, one that he and his wife could design to perfection and meet the needs of their beautiful family. Charlene and Frank were excited and proud of what they were doing for the future of their family. Not only would this be the perfect place to grow up, but it would be the birthright of their sons and worth a lot of money in the future. A legacy for the Renick brothers. Frank and Charlene's personalities were on full display in home videos that they filmed during the construction of their dream home. They were funny and adorably teased one another as they pointed out everything on the property. They showed where, amongst the studs and beams that had been put up, where everything would be situated in the house, and all the things that were located on the property. It was clear that the couple was in love with each other. Frank had always told the boys that Charlene came first, which grew in them a love and protective nature for their mother. It was their job, the three of them, Frank, Sam, and Ben, to look after Charlene, and they always did.
That's so sweet.
Isn't that really so adorable?
It really is, right? Like, because I feel like you don't hear about that anymore. I feel like that's your mother, you know? Like, it's a priority.
Right, like, we're the men in the family. We got to protect mom.
Yeah.
That's
and
so
he's,
cute.
It is. And he's teaching them a really valuable lesson, I think, you know? And, like, how to, like, one day you'll have your own wife, and this is how you have to treat your wife.
Right.
Like, that's cool.
It's instilling in them you have to respect women.
That as well.
And it's clear later on in life that's how Sam and Ben grew up.
Yeah, that's really nice.
By the spring of 1989, with Sam being 4 and Ben being 2, the family moved into their finally finished home. They were elated. As seen through the home videos that Frank was constantly filming, the boys grew up just as the couple had planned, close and loving the outdoor escape that was all theirs. All 72 acres of it. That peace lasted for 4 years, until tragedy struck while the family of 4 had been on a trip. They received a call in their hotel room that informed them that firefighters had been dispatched to their property because there had been an explosion.
Oh my God.
Unfortunately, there wasn't much left of their home nor their belongings inside.
I mean, that's pretty crazy to hear that your house just exploded.
Right. And they weren't far away, so they rushed to the scene. And when they got to the home that they had painstakingly designed themselves, it was destroyed. Charlene wept as the flames ate up all that they had planned for. After an investigation was held, it was determined that the propane storage tank on the property, the one that Frank pointed out in their home videos, had leaked around 3,000 gallons of propane.
Oh my God.
Into their home.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and this caused a mass explosion. It was actually so large that the local police thought there had been an earthquake.
That's insane. They are lucky that they were not in that house.
I know.
Because they would have all been dead.
They would have all died in that explosion if they were home. So although this was a tragedy that they had built this home and they lost everything they kind of planned for, and like this is where they brought their kids at first, it was lucky that they survived it.
Yeah, and you know what? It's really about the family unit's still around. Everything's okay. You can fix everything that you lost. Those are just material things.
Yes, and no propane storage tank moving forward.
Moving forward, no more.
That is dangerous. I mean, I know you have to have it on your property, but that's scary.
It is scary. Gas leaks are serious.
Now, the Renick slowly began to rebuild their home, and they do get insurance money for this. So the home that they're going to rebuild is extremely large, a lot larger than the original home on the property. While the family lived in a trailer during the construction, they were hit with yet another tragedy. Charlene was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. It was hard at the time for 8-year-old Sam and 6-year-old Ben to fully understand what was happening to their mother, but they knew she was sick, and they always remembered, just as their father had said to them, that they always had to protect her. And through her surgeries and treatments, they all did. Charlene had a double mastectomy and went through both chemo and radiation therapy. And it is really important, and I think this is a nice place to kind of like stop and just say that it is so important, ladies, because I know we have a lot of female listeners, that, and as the month of October approaches, that we're getting our mammograms every year. I can't stress that enough, because my mom had breast cancer twice, survived both times, but it's just really important, and it is kind of shocking. I know it's something we put off in our daily lives, but it just, when detected, it's, the treatment's incredible. So
yeah, that's early important. Detection is key.
The treatment worked, and Charlene made a slow recovery. The family moved into an even larger home that was built on the property to celebrate Charlene's survival and their second chance. The boys continued to be close and enjoy the property they grew up on. Because Frank was in the animal business, he always encouraged the boys to have pets, especially exotic ones. And this was something that Ben specifically really enjoyed. He had a large snake and remembered the time that it gave birth, that it had fascinated him. And from then on, snakes and snake breeding had become a passion of Ben's.
That's so scary. I mean, listen, I get everybody likes what they like, but I don't know. Something about snakes, I can't do it.
Yeah, I would say reptiles are not for me. I understand that they're cool.
But they are cool.
I just can't. They make me nervous. And I hope that one day when we have a child, there's no exotic pet fascination.
Or like, you know, like they want a turtle or anything like that. I wouldn't be happy about that.
You wouldn't be happy with a turtle? No. You know, they have a lot of diseases, actually.
Well, I don't want to, like, you know.
Because you end up taking care of it.
Well, that's the whole thing, right? I mean, I think any parent who's listening could like, agree with us, right? I mean, that's what happens. Well, you wind up taking care of everything.
In this situation, like, Ben was truly obsessed with snakes. And it was like, he loved it. It was like his whole life.
I mean, that's cool. But I just wouldn't be caught dead around any snakes.
Yeah.
But, like, okay, I love chameleons. I think they're cool as hell. Like, I would have a chameleon.
I didn't know about this passion of yours.
Yeah, chameleons are kind of cool. But, like, you know, like in the geckos and the chameleons, like, those are cool. But snakes are different. I don't know. Okay. I don't do snakes.
Slithery.
Too slithery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, it's cool that he has a passion.
That is true.
It's very rare that people are so passionate about one particular thing. Like, they found their thing.
Right, because I think everybody needs a passion project. I mean, all we do is we work all the time, so it's nice to have something else.
And if you can really turn your passion into your work, that's incredible.
Oh, that's the best.
As the years went on, Ben's passion in regards to reptiles grew. And to make things easier for him, and to kind of be interested in what his son was interested in, Frank built him a reptile house on the property in 2002.
What a nice dad.
I know. Unfortunately, the family did not get long together after they moved into their home because Charlene's cancer had come back, and she would succumb to her illness on December 31st, 2008.
That's really sad.
Charlene's loss was difficult on the entire family, but particularly rough on Frank, who had lost his partner, the love of his life, at an early age. The boys, who were 23 and 21, were also distraught, as you could imagine. Before she had died, Charlene made them both promise that they would take care of the land and save it for their children to enjoy, just as she and Frank had planned. She said that would make her happy. The boys took the promise that they made to their mother very seriously. Okay. Before we get any further, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break and talk about our first sponsor of today's show. Okay, let's get back to the episode. Over the next few years, Sam went on to leave the property with his wife, Allie. The couple would go on to have children. Ben stayed on the property, as in the years after his mother's passing, he was still single. It was on the 72 acres that he chose to build his business, Rennick Reptiles. Ben continued his passions with snakes into his adult life, and he was making good money doing so. However, if you ask anyone who knew Ben, they would tell you that Ben's involvement in the breeding business had nothing to do with money, and more to do with how much he cared about the animals. Everyone who was in the snake breeding business that would talk about Ben, they would always say that he was really respectful, you know, towards the animals and the process, and he did things professionally, he did things right. So that's why people relied on him. He had a really good reputation in the reptile world, I guess you could say.
I mean, that's pretty important, though, because, like, I think, you know, you kind of deal with the same thing with, like, dogs and cats and stuff of that nature,
yeah,
right?
Because you get bad breeders.
Right, you get bad breeders or irresponsible breeding or whatever the case may be. You want someone that actually cares.
Exactly.
So that's good. Good for Ben.
Ben Renick sold designer snakes worldwide, and he was really well known in the industry. In his breeding facility, which was on the property his parents had initially purchased, he focused mainly on snakes with particular mutations, colors, and patterns. At first, he promoted his business at shows all across the country. There are many clips of Ben at these conventions talking excitedly and passionately about the snakes he had. Now, of course, snakes aren't for everybody because he had, like, from little snakes to 500-pound snakes.
That is so scary.
So, yeah, so it's not for everybody, but it's really apparent how much he cared and how passionate he was, which is cool to see in the videos.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shortly after his company began to grow, at the age of 23, he met 22-year-old Lindley Gallatin at a friend's party in 2010. The two quickly fell for each other, and he introduced Lindley to Sam and his sister-in-law, Allie, with whom he was very close. Sam and Allie were happy for Ben. He had found someone who was also into snakes and didn't think his business was weird, so it seemed like they were the perfect couple. In addition to that, Ben had always been a great kid, and he grew up to be a great guy, but he'd always been quiet and shy, so Sam was really happy to see his brother happy and to see him, you know, get a girlfriend and a girlfriend who was into the same things he was into, too, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's really important, right? I mean, especially with snakes, you want someone that, like, actually is like, oh, that's pretty cool. At least they have common ground, right?
Yes. Allie said that Lindley was really nice and sweet and loved Ben, so that's why they welcomed her into the family with open arms. It seemed as if they truly were the perfect couple. Lindley enjoyed the world of snakes that Ben had created, and Ben fully embraced Lindley's 3-year-old son that she had from a previous relationship. The couple had built a home on the property when they found out that, after just a year of being together, that they were expecting a child of their own. When their daughter was born, everyone said that the couple was through the roof with excitement. Lindley loved her daughter, and Ben was an obsessed, doting father. Although things were going wonderfully for both Sam and Ben, the same could not be said for Frank. Sam and Allie had agreed to work for Frank and the feed business after Charlene's passing, because it was clear that Sam's father needed help. And that was back in early 2009. And even then, it was clear to both Sam and Allie that the company was in serious financial trouble. But by 2012, the problems were growing more serious. One day, when Frank was out of the office, a postal inspector came by and handed them a cease and desist order for the company. It turned out that Frank had committed mail fraud because he had been using funds from the company to cover and pay for Charlene's medical expenses and bills. Because of this, Frank was looking at an indictment. And if it went to trial, which it looked like it would, he would be facing serious jail time. Also, because of the fraud, the property and the structures on them were at risk because his assets would be seized because he owed money.
Well, I just want to say that is extremely sad because I understand he committed crimes, but it's like, I think, sometimes it's like, what choice do you have? If your wife or loved one was sick, I mean, there's people out there that would do anything for them, you know. So you feel bad. Someone that's just trying to make sure that they make ends meet and to pay for the medical expenses. I mean, that is the saddest thing I've heard. We're like, because it seems like this guy's a really good guy.
Yeah.
But he's doing the wrong thing. But he did it because he was trying to save his wife. So it's almost like you don't want people to commit crimes, but you understand why, you know?
Right. In this situation, it's very clear that what he did for a good reason and for someone that he loved. And if put in the same situation, you know, maybe some of us would do the same thing.
Yeah.
But Frank was determined not to let any of this happen. It would destroy the dream that he and Charlene had. Everything would be taken away from the boys and his grandchildren. 24 hours before the FBI was set to take possession of all of Frank and the business's assets, including the 72 acres and all the properties on it, Frank Renick died by suicide. Ben had found his father's deceased body on Father's Day morning.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's rough.
That's so sad.
So again, another tragedy for the Renick family. The loss of their father was very tough on both Sam and Ben, especially now that they knew they only had each other. But Frank did get his final wish. His death put an end to the investigation, and the property owned by the Renick family was not seized by federal government agencies. So because of his death and the end of the investigation, Frank's will stood. The wish that he and his wife had was to split everything between his two sons, which was hard because there were so many properties, including Ben's business, on the lot. So this is what they decided to do. Ben was set to inherit the 72-acre property and large farmhouse on it. And to help, Sam received a sum of $1.2 million in cash. However, that $1.2 million in cash was given to Sam with the understanding that he helped Ben take care of the property.
Okay.
Now, the reason for this was that they wanted to keep the brothers close and kind of basically put them in business together in a way. It's complicated. And it will lead to a lot of complications. When Sam and Allie got the money from the inheritance, they learned that the large farmhouse needed a lot of work. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of work. It would be impractical for them to maintain both their home and this farmhouse when no one else was living in it, as Ben, Lindley, and their children had their own house on the property. So Sam and Allie made the decision to move into the farmhouse with their family. Allie and Sam said that although it was expensive, they loved living on the farmhouse. It was so nice living so close to Ben and his family. They could see each other all the time. They took turns babysitting for each other, and the cousins were basically living together. They would always share Sunday dinners together every week.
I mean, that's really nice. A close family. And it's almost like they're living on a compound, like, you know, like a family
compound.
Yeah,
essentially they are.
Yeah. That just sucks, though, in a way, because I feel like one kid, though, received money that I feel like they're going to have to throw into the house to fix the farmhouse.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Is that, like, fair? I don't know.
I mean, I like to call it the burden of being the oldest child.
Oh, is that?
It's a burden I bear myself.
I can't relate to that.
I think that I see it as being a little unfair that one son's inheritance has to be put into the others, especially when it seems like financially Ben is a little bit more set up than Sam is.
Right, because I mean he has the barn and the farmhouse and the land and everything else there. So I don't know.
Because all the money that Sam is putting into this property is going into property that Ben owns. He's not putting equity into his own pocket.
No.
And then at the same time, Sam and Allie, it seemed, had gone into business with the feed farm, which. And now I don't know details, but I'm assuming they were supposed to inherit, but then went bankrupt because of what happened with Charlene and the incidents with Frank.
Right. So they're not even benefiting from that. They're right on the losing end of that as well.
And so where they worked for the last 3 years, they're no longer employed at.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you got a good deal, but
yeah.
Hopefully hopefully the brothers are okay through this decision.
They can love each other through this. Yeah. Because remember, this is the promise that they made to their mother before she died.
That is true.
And their father died for them to have it.
Right.
It's very emotionally loaded. But as time went on, the one thing that was supposed to bring the brothers close together, the property, was slowly building a rift between them because of the finances of such a large property and house. But this rift was not clearly evident at first. It grew slowly, as most family problems do, and compounded over time. So Sam and Allie were spending the inheritance that Sam had received from his parents on fixing up the large farmhouse and maintaining the property. Even though they were living on the farmhouse, everything, again, was owned by Ben. So you could understand that they were worried that all of their inheritance would go towards building up the assets of Ben's. The tentative agreement that existed was that once everything was fixed up and Ben would get some deals with the snake business, that Sam would eventually be paid back for the work that he was putting into the property.
Okay.
So not necessarily the work he's putting into the house that he's living in, but the property itself that's owned by Ben.
Right, the value of the property. Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
However, in the meantime, Sam and Allie were kind of going for broke. Sam explained that he wasn't worried initially because, in his direct words, he thought his brother Ben was the safest bet in town. He believed that Ben would make good on his promise. And to make things right, Ben poured his energy and attention into Rennick Reptiles. The better he did, he felt like the better off his family would be. Not just his immediate family, but also his extended. Ben's knowledge and compassion towards snakes, paired with the marketing power of the internet, really helped the company's sales skyrocket.
I mean, that's really good because now you could get clients from all over the world that want snakes.
Right. Lindley helped Ben with the production of Rennick Reptiles. She helped Ben with the filming of YouTube videos, which drew in a lot of attention. With the success of the business and their family being complete with the birth of their daughter, Ben and Lindley decided it was the perfect time to get married. Both Sam and Allie were in the wedding party when the couple got married on April 14, 2014. After the wedding, Ben agreed to help Lindley recognize her business dreams, just as she had helped his business grow. So here we have another complication. See, this is how family dramas start. And although Ben is to be reimbursing Sam and Allie, now Lindley wants to start a business, so Ben is going to be funding this new business for his wife.
Now, I wonder how they feel about Lindley as far as, like, you know, her starting a business, because I'm sure it's not going to be good.
I mean, I think that's something they'll probably keep to themselves. They like Lindley up to this point.
Okay.
So they're just going to kind of, they have to keep things like copacetic, I feel.
I don't like this. I feel like this is going to go in a very bad direction. Someone is mad at somebody.
Well, this is a true crime podcast.
Yeah, I mean, no, I know that. Yeah. But I mean, I could see how something could happen because now there's going to be bad blood here.
Oh, things are getting complicated.
This is wild.
Lindley had always wanted her own spa business. Something that she was also passionate about. So Ben financed the opening of the business that would be known as Ascension Spa. It was around this time, in late 2014, that things began to go downhill for both Rennick brothers. Ben had provided all of the money for the rent of the location, the building of the spa, and all of the materials and goods needed for it to be successful. Lindley was a massage therapist, so that would be her role in the business, while also managing the other employees who could provide beauty treatments, manicures, pedicures, and also massages. Lindley understood how much the internet could help her with her new business, because she had seen how much it had helped Ben's. So she invited local YouTube channels to come and film videos for the grand opening of the spa. And she hired kind of like a production team to film videos of the spa and help with promotion. It seemed Lindley had the knowledge of the business and marketing to make Ascension Spa a success. The only problem was, it wasn't. As Lindley began to spend more and more time at the spa, Ben, who was bankrolling the whole investment, began to wonder why the business was struggling so much financially. If there's no demand for a spa, there's going to be no customers. I'm just throwing it out there.
That is true. That is true. I don't know. I feel like, I mean, hey, listen, spas sound great, but it's not everybody's thing. So,
I don't know. It's hard to make a lot of money with them.
Yeah.
Especially if it's just not the area in which spas are going to thrive. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like farming communities.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about the area, but yeah, I mean, if it is like that, then yeah, no, I doubt it. I mean, if it was more in a very big city, you know, maybe somewhere on the East Coast or on the West Coast, maybe I could see maybe you gain some traction there.
Right.
But
when people have extra money to spend, they spend it on luxury things. And I believe spa treatments are a luxury thing.
100%. I mean, most people are just trying to survive and, mm-hmm. and make sure that food's on the table and things and bills are paid. So, yeah, I don't know. Spas are not the best, I guess.
Well, it's a risk. It's a risky investment, I would say.
Understand it's her passion, but you would think that if they were to start another company, it would be something mm-hmm. along the lines of feed or something to do with snakes or like an offshoot of what they're already doing because they're successful at it.
Yeah.
You know?
And we know sometimes our passions can't be our full-time jobs. Like, we'd love to just do the podcast. Financially, it wouldn't carry us through, so we don't. Like,
right.
Sometimes you just have to be realistic about life.
You do.
Life,
you do. You know? and yeah, I would love to sit here and do this all the time, but it's just not the way life goes sometimes.
Yes. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day.
Maybe we'll solve a murder.
Maybe.
So Sam, that's what one production company said to us once.
Yeah.
They were like, you know, maybe just solve a murder. I was like, oh, okay, no problem. We'll get right on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Sam and Allie were struggling just as much as Ben and Lindley were at this time, but for entirely different reasons. The couple was not trying to open or maintain businesses. They were simply trying to survive. And that is a struggle, right? So here you have Sam and Allie trying to survive, and they're watching Ben and Lindley struggle, but struggle because they're having difficulty with their second business they're opening. And it's like two different worlds of struggle that could build animosity, as you can imagine. It was easier for Ben to be able to afford to live and maintain his dwelling on the property because of what he was bringing in from the sale of his specialty snakes. But Sam and Allie weren't making as much. And I think people underestimate how much money it truly is to have a large house and to maintain the cost of that large house. And because of that, Sam and Allie were pulling a deficit each month. So they were not only using their inheritance to build up the property, but to pay their monthly bills. And that inheritance was getting rapidly smaller.
Yeah, I mean, it goes, especially when you're not bringing anything in to recoup what you've spent.
Right.
It's just really sad, though, here, I have to say, because this family has had nothing but tragedy. And it's really sad because it seems that they're very hardworking and good people. And it's really sad to see a family like that go through everything that this family has gone through so far. You just want something to like actually work out for them.
You do.
You know?
And I think it shows what shows that the two brothers are good and love each other is that they're loving each other through this.
Yeah, because it's not easy.
Yeah. In order to make some money to recoup their losses, Sam and Allie chose to sell some furniture from the house. Sam had talked to Ben about this before he sold anything, because technically Ben owns everything within the house. It's a little tricky, like the furniture that was there before Sam and Allie moved in. So Ben said to Sam, I have no problem with it. Sell whatever you need to sell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good at least.
Yeah. It turned out, though, that Lindley did have a problem with the sale of the furniture.
Ah, here we go.
Technically, she believed that the furniture belonged to Ben because he was the one that owned the property. To voice her opinion, Lindley sent a long, angry text message to Sam about how it wasn't fair that he sold the furniture. Allie got very upset about this explosion that her husband received, and she explained back about how they and their family were sacrificing everything to be there to honor the wishes of Frank and Charlene. After that incident, they thought it was weird that Lindley was always so nice to their faces, but clearly had this built-up animosity or different feelings privately. Of course, because they were close, the brothers resolved things amongst themselves, but their wives were still at odds, and Ben and Allie really didn't speak after that, which is a shame because at one point Ben and Allie were very close. But Allie said that she was just really hurt for her husband and that it was something that she didn't want to let go because she felt so bad for Sam and everything he was trying to make right.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's a fine line, right? Because, you know, when you're with somebody who's having some problems with their family, you don't want to get too involved, but you also want to feel like you're supporting your husband or wife.
Right.
You know, so like, yeah, that is extremely complicated. But I mean, you know, they could easily turn around and be like, well, Lindley, your business is a crapshoot and you're not doing anything with it.
Right. But that, like, would make things worse. So they're trying to be good.
But yeah. I'm saying, like, they have an equal right as to be like, hey, listen, I know that you're doing your passion project, but you're actually hurting everyone else.
I get what you're saying. Like, they could be saying messed up things, but they're not. So that's why they're so offended by Lindley's outburst here.
Over furniture.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they're wasting their his brother's money with something that's just not working.
Right.
And it's putting a toll on everybody. So, agreed. Like, selling furniture should be the last thing you should be, like, complaining about.
Well, especially when they're doing it to pay their monthly bills.
It's okay. I'll get in there with my microphone, Jerry Springer, the whole thing. Like, I got you.
It seems like it's approaching that situation. Yeah. I agree. Okay. What we're going to do now is stop here and talk about our final sponsor of today's show. Okay. Let's get back to the show. And it's within that very complicated situation we were talking about that things remain for years. Sam and Allie struggling to keep things afloat, living in the farmhouse. Ben flourishing in his business, but struggling to keep his wife's dreams alive. Their relationships all strained. It's complicated. But in 2017, something happened that promised to change a lot of the family's problems. The introduction of more money. Ben had received a huge sale with Renick Reptiles. Someone, and it's actually someone from the NHL that was really into snakes. Someone had placed a large order for his specially blended ball pythons. So that's cool. Like, he was going to buy all the ball pythons that Ben had. The entire sale was for $1.2 million.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's wild. Isn't it? That's so funny that that amount reoccurred.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. That's what Sam inherited. That's what Ben was getting for this sale. But then you also have to, like just understand as a person, like, okay, that was my inheritance. My brother got all the property, and then he's just getting that for the sale of his snakes.
I think you just said snail of the snakes.
Did I?
I think so. Oh. I could be wrong.
Oh, what a loser. The sale of the snakes. Like, you understand why, like, you might get a little, like,
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, that's why I'm saying the other brother received the property and stuff, which always has better value over the long term. Yeah. And the other brother only got money that he's spending, out of control because he has to.
But then this is good because Ben might be able to replenish some of the money that Sam put into the property.
Well, that's your hopes. Those are the hopes of that. Not only that, though, I understand he's selling it for $1.1 million, but... Oh, that's what he made, but he also has the expenses of feeding those snakes and housing those snakes.
Well, they were snakes that he already had. But this guy was just like, I really like your specially blended snakes.
Why'd you say it like that?
I don't know. They were actually really cool looking. They're the ones that, like, if you're into snakes, and I don't know too much about it, but I looked into it, but they're like, it's like the banana kind, so like they're white with the...
Yellow?
Yellow, yeah. It looks really cool, actually.
That's pretty cool.
So... The first payment was due to be paid to Ben in February of 2017, and then the rest of the money was due to come in later. But before the second payment could be made, tragedy would once again strike the Rennick family. They can't catch a break.
Why can't they catch a break? What's going on here?
On June 8th, 2017, the 911 call center for Montgomery County, Missouri, received a frantic call from Lindley Rennick. She was sobbing into the phone and could barely speak. She was so upset. She finally was able to get out that her husband was on the ground and there was blood everywhere. The dispatcher asked her to repeat what she said, and she did. Her husband was on the ground and there was blood everywhere. She was asked if she knew why there was blood everywhere, and she said no. She had seen him and then ran outside. The dispatcher responded, "Okay, so you have no idea how it happened." "No," she replied. They asked if he was conscious or breathing, and she told them that she didn't know, but she added that her brother-in-law just went inside. It appeared that Sam had arrived on the scene. Next, Sam got on the phone with the 911 operator. He was asked if he knew what was happening. On the recording, Sam could be heard saying no, and then added, "It might have been the snake."
The snake?
"Lindley," he called out, "Lindley, I don't know where the snake is." And then he said, "Oh my God." As you can imagine, this was not a normal call received by the 911 operator. So she said, "Okay, tell me what's going on. What exactly do you see?" Because she has to prep the officers and first responders who are about to show up, like what they're in for.
Right. Because, I mean, if it is, if the snake is responsible for this, then, I mean, it's dangerous that it's probably roaming around the room where he's been killed.
Yeah. So Sam said, "Oh my God, my brother is dead." She asked what he thought may have happened, and Sam said he got killed by a snake. He went on to explain that his brother raises snakes, and some of them are 500 pounds.
I still can't get over that. That is scary.
It's wild.
I never want to be in a room with one.
No.
Actually, maybe I spoke too soon.
We recently just watched Anaconda, actually.
We did. But actually, I have. I remember when you were in school and sometimes they would have like the zoo person and they would come with some of the snakes, the ones that like are not like terrifying.
No, but they didn't bring a 500 pound snake.
Well, not a 500 pound snake, but there was like a boa. I think it was like a boa or something. I don't know. It was white and yellow. That's why when you said it, I kind of had some flashbacks. Python. Well, whatever it was, I had flashbacks because I remember petting it. And then like my teacher was like, "Oh, it's okay. You can pet it." And I'm like, "I want to get out of here." Like, I'm actually afraid of snakes. I think that's something that
you've built up this memory in your mind, like you're J-Lo on a boat.
I need to attack it.
And your teacher is bringing snakes.
I need to like run and like try to trap it. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, snakes and sharks, I'm not okay.
It's okay.
Everything else, I'm okay.
You're very rarely in the room with them at the same time.
So. Well, thank God. Thank God for that.
So back to this 911 call.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The dispatcher asked Sam if he knew where the snake was, and Sam said no, he didn't. So she tried to confirm if Ben was actually dead, and Sam confirmed that he was cold, blue even. Shortly after the call had been placed, law enforcement officers from the Montgomery Sheriff's Department arrived at the scene at 6:31 p.m. First responders arrived closely thereafter. They were greeted by a distraught Lindley and Sam. But they themselves were scared. This was not a normal call. They had a victim in a storage facility with over 3,000 snakes and a large snake on the loose.
Yeah. I mean, how do you approach the situation?
A snake that may be responsible for its breeder's death. We see what happened at the scene through the body cam footage from deputies. You can tell that they're really nervous and apprehensive about the situation. They get to Lindley, who was on the ground sobbing. She was barely coherent or able to answer them. They asked her if she had an anaconda in there and if she knew where it was. She told them the whole damn building was full of snakes. She clearly couldn't help them. As the officers approached the facility, they talked to each other about what they would do if they encounter the snake. And sorry for the snake lovers out there, but their consensus was, if there was a 500-pound snake coming at them, that they would have to shoot it. When they got inside, they found Ben Renick on the ground. They confirmed that he was deceased. There was blood pooled around his head, which had some disfigurement. In the body cam footage, the deputies could be heard saying, "Something got him," and a paramedic confirmed that there was bite marks on him. These comments confirmed for those in the room that there was a snake on the loose. A deputy could be heard saying, "There's a snake loose in here, so watch your ass." And do you have anyone we can call to deal with an anaconda? But as time passed, some clarity came to the situation. The facility was checked from top to bottom, and it was confirmed that every snake that Ben owned, especially the larger ones, were accounted for and in their enclosures. This gave the investigators time to look at the body and through the crime scene. The deputy that had looked at Ben first, as well as the paramedic, the ones that said he was bitten, and Sam for that matter, clearly didn't know much about snakes, because upon re-examination, it was learned that Ben had not been bitten by a snake. Rather, he had been shot 3 times.
What?
This wasn't an accidental death. By snake, it was murder.
Well, the last time I checked, snakes can't shoot guns, so.
Well, no hands.
So. Okay, this is odd.
Mm-hmm. This scene was processed. And in doing so, investigators found shell casings under the racking that held the snake containers near where his body was situated. When they were able to turn his body over, they were able to determine that he had 3 gunshot wounds to his back. Well, he had 2 in his back and 1 in the back of his head. So 3 in total, but to the back of him he was shot. This is going to make the detectives who had arrived at the scene of this now homicide to immediately suspect Sam, because he had been the one to first lead investigators and those who first arrived at the scene in the direction of a snake bite, like the snakes did this.
One would assume right off the bat that that is what it is, though, because you are handling, you know, snakes that could be dangerous. I don't want to give all snakes a bad rap, but like he could be having something in one of those enclosures that could have killed him. So like for the brother to, you know, automatically go to that being the first thing, I don't think is like it's not weird.
No, it's not weird. I think that's more where my mind would go before murder.
Yeah, I don't think he's trying to like throw investigators off. I think it was just something like your brain goes to first because he's handling snakes.
Yeah, and dangerous ones.
Right.
In order to get the full story of what happened that day, the detectives asked both Lindley and Sam to answer some questions for them, and they did so. Lindley was spoken to first. She was asked to go through her day up until she found her husband's body. She said that it had been a normal day, that she had worked her hours at the spa. The only thing that happened that was odd was that towards the end of her shift at the spa, she'd been trying to call Ben, but he hadn't been answering his phone or text messages that she was sending. And this was something that was out of character for him, especially because she was communicating with him about picking up their children. Lindley explained that because she had not heard from Ben, she went ahead and picked up the kids herself, a task that was usually completed by Ben. She told the detectives the whole time she was picking up the kids and driving home that she was trying to call or text Ben, but she heard nothing from him. When she got home, she left the kids in the house and went up to the reptile facility to talk to Ben about what was going on and why he hadn't been responding. And that was when she found him and immediately ran out of the facility and called 911. She said it must have been her screams and yells that attracted Sam, who also lived on the property.
Okay. I mean, so it seems like everything's checking out, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. It's just the fact that he was shot 3 times. It's like someone had to have been in that area. It's not like, I mean, because who would make their way all the way onto a 72-acre property to shoot him 3 times behind his back? Because he obviously did not see his attacker.
Right. This is definitely not just a robbery out of nowhere. This is someone who knew Ben.
Right. You know, it has to be either someone that's like jealous of, you know, could it be his brother who knows that he just received that money? But I don't think jealousy is within this character. because they've always been close.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But yeah, for someone to just randomly do that on that property, I don't know. So it has to be someone within this family, I think.
Or knew that he was located there.
Yeah, like maybe like another breeder or a buyer that would maybe buy from him.
Right, like a deal gone wrong or something.
Possibly.
They asked Lindley if there was anyone who would have wanted to hurt Ben, or if there was anyone who didn't like him. Lindley explained to the detectives the struggles both her and Ben and Sam and Allie had been having with money, and the constraints and complications of the inheritances. She said that there was just a lot between Sam and Ben. Sam and Allie were having trouble paying their bills, and Sam was jealous of Ben's success, especially because of the latest deal he had. She said on a day-to-day basis, Ben and Sam were good, but there were tensions. They asked Lindley what Sam's demeanor was like, and she said that Sam was the opposite of Ben. Ben was calm and cool, and Sam had more of a depressive personality, and he was more in your face, unprofessional, and could be very dramatic. And those were the words that Lindley had for her brother-in-law.
Hmm.
Not flattering.
No, definitely not.
Next, the detective spoke with Sam Renick. Sam had a lot to say about the situation. He explained to the detectives that he and his brother were not necessarily as close as they had been when they were younger. One of the detectives asked him why, and Sam explained a bit about the financial situation of the families. He said that there had been a dispute over if and how they were going to split up the farm, meaning the whole 72 acres, and about money because he had put so much into the property and he wanted to be made even. However, there was also this conversation about even if they were to split the 72 acres, would Sam and Allie even be able to financially maintain it because it was so expensive? And then because they couldn't maintain it, they would sell it, but then that would mean half of the property would be gone. And that's not what was in the wishes of the family. So it was a very complicated situation to deal with. Sam just said it was this whole big thing. It's clear that Sam and Allie helped out Frank, thinking that they were going to take over the company, but that company became bankrupt in paying for the medical needs of Charlene. So because there was nothing left, Sam was kind of left with the short end of the inheritance. Then, instead of Sam being able to use the $1.2 million to start a new business, as Frank had done from his father's money, he had to spend it all to upkeep the property that wasn't even his.
Right. Which is weird, because you would think that they would at least come to some agreement where they would split the land, or at least the land that the house was on would be given to the brother. Like,
right.
I feel like, you're still going based on your mother and father's wishes. You're just a small divide of a larger property where the building sits on.
Right.
You know?
Or at least maybe a small part of the property, and then Sam and Allie could build a house that would be more maintainable for them versus this uber large farmhouse. Like, it was crazy big.
Well, I'm sure there was an appeal. They loved it, I'm sure. But yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. Sam went on to say that what added tensions was the fact that Ben was always talking about money and the success that he was having with Renick Reptiles, how much he made this day or how much he made with this sale. And it did bother Sam, he admitted, because his family was struggling. His frustrations with his brother were made clear. So next, the detectives asked Sam if he would take a polygraph test and submit to a gun residue test. Sam agreed to it all. He took the shirt that he was wearing off and gave it to them. And he was then further tested for gunshot residue, like his hands and his arms, because he was wearing a t-shirt at the time. And he also gave the detectives his cell phone to check along with everything else, and he gave them all of the passwords to his social media accounts. So, he's being overly cooperative here, I would say.
Oh, definitely.
Sam would go on to pass both the polygraph test and the gunshot residue test. So no gunshot residue was detected on his clothes or his body. They let Sam go because even though he was their biggest suspect at the moment, they had nothing to hold him on. One big problem they had in the investigation was the fact that they didn't have the murder weapon. The investigation into Ben's homicide continued, but the detectives had no leads, and it was becoming more and more obvious that Sam had not killed his brother through the tracking of his phone and the confirmation of his alibi. But that didn't mean that the relationship between Sam and Lindley improved. In fact, Lindley completely isolated herself and her children in their home on the property from Sam, Allie, and their cousins. Just weeks after Ben's funeral, within 30 days of his death, Sam and Allie received a letter in the mail. It was from Lindley's attorney. She was giving them notice to vacate the property.
What?
The property she owned.
You gotta be kidding me.
Nope. Legally, when Ben died, Lindley inherited the 72 acres and all the properties on it.
Oh my God. Okay, well, I think we should go investigate Lindley then, because it seems to be that this could have been a plan. You know, I don't know. This does not seem right to me at all.
How heartless.
It is. It's extremely heartless.
This is that family's legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to kick them off the property?
Yeah.
That red they put flag,
all
man.
Of their inheritance into.
Yep. Red flag. That's all I'm going to say. Red flag. That is insane to me.
Yeah, I would say the biggest red flag of all time.
I think there isn't ever going to be a bigger red flag than that.
Yeah, this is pretty huge.
Like, come on, man. Like, but what
30
I don't
know, days.
But yeah,
that
right.
means she got this started right away.
Well, yeah, she probably had to. She had her failing business, and then now her husband's dead and can't support her, so she's just going to make sure she
yeah
takes full advantage. I don't know.
Not to mention the money she has from the sale of those snakes.
I mean, maybe she isn't involved, but I think that that is extremely callous.
Yeah.
To
heartless.
30 days, you're going to kick the family. And listen, just because your husband's dead doesn't mean that that's still not your family. You have children with this man. Mm-hmm. Those are their family members too.
Right.
And if the goal was to always stay together and stay a tight-knit family, you're kind of doing the opposite, which means you really never cared about that from the beginning.
Yeah, you're destroying the dream of Frank and Charlene.
That sacrificed everything.
Died for it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it appeared that Lindley was intending to sell the property. Sam and Allie were shocked. And although they were seeking the advice of legal counsel, Lindley went ahead and made the fast sale of the property, selling it along with everything on it for $740,000.
Wow.
Frank and Charlene's dream had been destroyed twice over at this point, because their son had been murdered and now the property had been sold. Sam and Allie believed that not only did Lindley's quick sale of the property reveal the kind of person she was, but it might have revealed a motive for murder.
I think you guys are onto something.
The investigators had not suspected Lindley until the sale of the property. Well, I don't want to say they immediately suspected her, but it definitely gave them cause for pause. And they wanted her to answer some follow-up questions for them, as they put it. The detective asked her to come into the station to have a follow-up interview. It was there that she was asked more in-depth questions about her and Ben's relationship. She was open with them. She revealed to them that she and Ben had had a troubled relationship as of late, and because of that, she had been having an affair.
Okay. Maybe that's why her business isn't doing well. Maybe she's like doing not good things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Focus on different kind of massages.
Yeah, for real. Let's focus on some pedicures and some manicures
ahead,
and stuff.
I was going to say, go ahead, John. Think of something else.
Focus on your brand. Let's go. What's going on here?
Well, she's focused on her. We'll talk. I'll continue to explain.
Yeah, yeah.
She told them that it wasn't always that way. That in the beginning, everything had been perfect, but there had been a lot of stress in their relationship because of money issues and with the family and the opening of her spa. It was all very stressful for Lindley. Lindley revealed that the person she had been having an affair with was a man named Eric Bremer. Now, the investigators were familiar with this man because after Ben's murder, they had spoken to him as he was one of the employees of the Ascension Spa, and they talked to all of Lindley's employees. Eric was someone who helped with the marketing of the spa, so she's very invested in her brand. He had been very flattering of Lindley when questioned by the detectives about her demeanor before and after the murder. He told them that he thought Lindley was one of the nicest people he had ever met, and he felt like a better person every time he walked away from a conversation with her.
Wow.
She explained that despite the fact that both of them were married, they developed a sexual relationship and began having an affair at the spa.
Red flag.
Yeah. Red flag, and explains all of Lindley's long hours at the spa.
Yeah, because it's not working.
No. The affair lasted until 3 months after the murder.
Oh, my God.
Ending in September of 2017.
I mean...
So she kept the affair going after Ben's murder.
Yeah.
By this time, the investigators were able to receive the phone communications of their murder victim. And by sifting through all of the text messages that were exchanged between Ben and his wife, they found that he had been fighting with Lindley via text message a lot. The things they fought about most were the spa, how it was making no money, and how she was there all the time. And not with him and the kids.
I mean, he has a point, and it's really sad that this guy's like fighting for his, not just his family, but his, his entire family. Because I believe that he's doing what he's doing and putting every ounce of energy into his reptile business in order to provide for his family and also his brother and trying to help.
I think he wants to pay Sam back.
Right. And I think that him going, you know, to help out his wife to start another business, he's believing that this is for the betterment of my entire family.
Right.
So when there's nothing coming from that and you've kind of fitted the bill, like, I mean, you expect something.
Yeah.
You expect there to be some kind of progress.
Or at least an answer as to why this isn't working.
Right.
And there's really, he's getting nothing in response. So the detectives theorized that maybe Lindley understood that it was only a matter of time before Ben found out about the affair, which would mean that the money backing the spa would stop coming in. Also, let's not forget the deal that Rennick Reptiles just got for $1.2 million. All of that, plus the $740,000 from the sale of the house and property, all to be received by Lindley. So we're talking about just shy of $2 million.
Yeah.
That's motive.
It is motive. I mean, she's having an affair. I mean, I don't want to say that like that means you're instantly a killer, but I mean, it means that you are not, you know, doing what you're supposed to do.
And could be deceptive.
Yeah, and listen, the way that we always say, you know, hey, look, the first suspect is usually a husband. It could be the other way around.
Yeah, and I'm easily actually shocked the detectives when they tested Sam for the gunshot residue. Why didn't they test Lindley?
I was thinking the same thing. I would have tested everybody because, like I said, who's driving onto this property? And they probably found no tracks either. Mm-hmm. So what property, you know, are you going to go to and commit this kind of crime and leave?
Right.
So it had to have been very quick. And the cops probably got there soon. So like they should have just tested everybody in the family that could have been there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the brother.
No, I agree. They asked Lindley if she would take a polygraph test, and she agreed, and she failed. Now, this doesn't really mean anything. It's not an indicator of anything. However, it gave the detectives a chance to tell her they wanted to do a post-test interview, which they planned on turning into an interrogation. During the questioning, she did not admit that she had anything to do with Ben's murder. And because they had no definitive proof to hold her, they had to let her go. The following day, Lindley obtained a defense attorney and stopped cooperating with the police. You would think the investigation would kick into high gear at this point, but it did not. There were no leads to follow, only people to question. And through that, the detectives learned nothing new. This left the investigation into Ben's death at a stalemate for the next 2.5 years.
Two and a half years?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
So Sam and Allie are sitting there thinking, we know who killed Ben, and she's not being brought to justice.
Yeah, and we can't do anything about it. And we got kicked out of our house.
Yeah.
And our family got torn apart.
Yep. Now, after those 2.5 years, there is going to be some movement in the case because a very useful tip came in.
Okay.
On January 14th, 2020, the investigators in Montgomery County were contacted by the Missouri State Highway Patrol because they heard from an inmate at the Boone County Jail named Brandon Blackwell. He told them that he had information on a murder case. He said that he had been in a previous relationship with guess who?
Lindley
Renick.
Oh, man. Okay.
He said that he'd been dating her also in 2017.
Wait, so she... Oh, wow. Okay.
When she was married. Potentially, and not too sure about this timeline here, I don't know the overlap in her affair with Eric Bremmer and Brandon Blackwell, but I think there was some overlap there as well. So Brandon admitted that he knew Lindley was married. But unlike Lindley's affair with Eric, her affair with Brandon did not stop months after Ben's murder. It lasted until 2018. And the two of them had a child together.
Huh.
So she's cheating on him with two different people.
Right.
Brandon said their relationship did not end well, that they were fighting a lot. And he said that Lindley unjustly filed orders of protection against him and had him charged with stalking in 2020. And that was actually what he was in jail for. He was waiting for a sentencing date for those charges. And before that happened, and he admitted, he said, listen, of course I want a lesser sentence. They all do. But I also want to do the right thing, and I have some pretty intense information here. And I feel like I need to get it out. I know what happened to Ben Renick.
Oh, my God. Please tell us. We'll give you your sentence. We'll reduce your sentence, please.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Well, Brandon said that Lindley confessed to him that she had killed her husband.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I think it was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But
well, now this will help investigators know where to look next,
right,
to get evidence.
And if they need him to testify, I'm sure they're going to have him do
that. Oh, yeah. Oh, a lot of people will testify. She admitted, meaning Lindley, to Brandon that she had conspired to kill Ben with her coworker, Ashley Shaw, one of the women who worked for her, and another ex of hers named Michael Humphrey. So another man enters the picture. So those, the three of them basically conspired to commit this murder. Brandon said that he had not spoken to Lindley in years, but in 2017, she reached out to him and the two started a relationship. And during that time, she told Brandon, just like she would later tell Michael Humphrey, that she had a very rocky relationship with Ben and that he was abusive. And Brandon had conversations with Lindley and Ashley where they told him that they hoped that Michael, to whom they reached out, could help them. And by help them, they meant Michael would help kill Ben at the farm.
This is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is crazy.
It's a very wide web, I would say.
Well, yeah, and she's using these people too.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's I can't believe somebody that has been with their husband for so long, the whole time it seems, to be just be manipulating other people and like planning and scheming to do harm. It's so sad, right? That someone could be that cold.
And that manipulative and that mean. Like, what was real?
It makes you really question if any of it was.
Things are going to get worse.
Oh, don't tell me that.
So, based on this information, an arrest warrant was obtained for Lindley Renick, Ashley Shaw, and Michael Humphrey. Sam Renick was informed that finally, after 3 years of waiting for justice, Lindley was going to be arrested. Michael Humphrey was the first of the three to be interviewed on January 16, 2020. Humphrey claimed that he agreed to accompany Lindley to the snake facility, but not to kill Ben. He explained that it was complicated. Humphrey said that he was not going to attack Ben when he got there, that rather Lindley had come up with a plan that she was going to introduce him as someone who was interested in buying snakes.
Okay, makes sense.
When this happened, the three of them went out to the reptile house. He said that when Ben's back was turned, Lindley tried to give him a gun. He said that he tried to refuse it. And these were his words because, you know, he doesn't want to look like a bad guy. He said, not to say I acted like a bitch or anything, because I didn't. I just shoved it back to her, like, whatever. And then she started talking again like everything was normal. I leaned over to look at one of the snakes, and that's when I heard shots. Michael said he ducked down, and when he turned around, he saw that Lindley was holding the gun.
Okay, so when she didn't get what she wanted, she just decided to do it herself.
Yes, while her husband's back was turned.
Yeah.
At that point, Michael Humphrey said he ran out of the facility, and while he was outside, he heard one or two more shots while he was standing by the car. So she shot him again. He said that when Lindley came out of the facility, he said, "What the fuck just happened?" And she said, "We gotta go, we gotta go." And then they left.
Having an affair is one thing, but the guy is there, knows that what's gonna happen. She actually does it herself, and then you're okay with her getting in the car with you? What if you're next? I would be like, lady, I'm done here. Bye.
Yeah. Well, I think
and then I would go tell on
her. He knew that the plan was murder, though.
That is true.
And the gun was provided by Michael Humphrey.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that changes a lot, actually.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's going to be more to the story.
I mean, he's still an accessory.
The story we're getting to Michael Humphrey from Michael Humphrey is convoluted because he's really trying to also protect himself. We'll get more of the story.
Okay.
Lindley Runnick was arrested the same day on January 16th, 2020, and charged with first-degree murder and armed criminal action. Michael Humphrey and Ashley Shaw were also arrested for first-degree murder. Now, Ashley Shaw immediately obtained a lawyer. She said to herself, I'm not going down for this. She told the prosecutor that she was willing to tell them everything in exchange for immunity. They said they were willing to hear her out, to hear the information she had, because in their opinion, there was a lot of missing puzzle pieces. And in order for them to put this picture together and actually be able to successfully prosecute the person who killed Ben, they would really need Ashley's story. And Ashley does give them a full detailed account of everything that happened. And it's for that reason that Ashley Shaw is given immunity. And I think what really gave her immunity was the fact that she wasn't at the farm that day. Ashley Shaw stated that Lindley Runnick told her and others that Ben, her husband, was abusive to her emotionally and that he had been sexually abusing her for years.
What do I feel like we've heard that being used before? And the hard part about that is, if truly that was happening, I feel that, and I feel bad and all, but that doesn't mean that you still organize this entire thing to have him killed like that.
Well, it wasn't happening.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying.
Like, I understand what you're saying.
Because you don't want to ignore a claim like that, but at the same time, I feel like it's being used here as an excuse.
Well, I think Lindley Runnick was a master manipulator.
Yeah.
And I think she also wanted to justify the fact to others. I think she had to make herself look like this good person, this positive beam of energy. And in order to make it justified, the affairs she was having, which were obvious to all of her employees, she has to make Ben out to be a monster.
Right. She had to soil his name. Mm-hmm. It wasn't good enough that she killed him, but she has to soil his name to make him out to be a bad guy.
And honestly, she painted a very dark picture of a very good man.
Right. That's sad.
Very sad. He was good to her. He provided for her, cared about her. He funded her dreams.
And then the whole time he's doing all this, you know, she's taking advantage of him.
Yeah. It's very sad. So back to what Ashley said. She told investigators and prosecutors that Lindley first planned to poison Ben. Ashley admitted that she got 12 to 15 Percocet pills and gave them to Lindley, who then blended those pills into a protein shake that she made for Ben. but it did not kill him. Instead, it only caused him to get ill and vomit. She said that Lindley then sought to contact Michael Humphrey because she believed he had access to guns. Shaw said that she went with Lindley to Humphrey's trailer. There, Lindley told Humphrey that Ben had been sexually abusing her and that she had tried to poison him but had been unsuccessful. She wanted to know if he knew anyone that could kill her husband for her. Shaw said that a few days later, Humphrey showed up at the spa and told Lindley that he could get her a gun so she could kill Ben herself. Then, later, on the afternoon of June 8, 2017, the day of the murder, Michael Humphrey picked up Lindley Renick, and from the spa, they drove to the property and to the snake facility. We know what happened from there, from what Humphrey said. They had a ruse where they were going to pretend that Michael Humphrey was someone interested in buying snakes. Lindley tried to give him the gun. Ultimately, he would not shoot Ben Renick. So Lindley had been the one to kill her husband. Ashley Shaw said that Lindley returned to the spa 2 hours after she left with Michael Humphrey. When she returned, she took her clothes off and scrubbed her body in the shower.
Wow.
Humphrey then arrived at the spa and asked Lindley whether she, Ashley Shaw, knew what happened, and Lindley said she doesn't know. Humphrey said good and then left. Michael Humphrey and Lindley Renick stood trial separately. Michael Humphrey was found guilty by a jury of first-degree murder and armed criminal action.
Yeah, I mean, he was there. He played a part.
He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
Okay.
However, he promised to waive his right of appeal, testify against Lindley, and show them where the murder weapon was so they would have DNA to connect Lindley to the scene if they lessened the sentence. So prosecutors really needed that DNA evidence and they really needed him to testify. So they agreed to, he was still sentenced to life in prison.
Okay.
But with the possibility of parole.
All right, so parole's back on the table pretty
Correct.
Much. Okay.
So not necessarily meaning he'll get it, but he still has to serve that minimum. Lindley's trial began on December 6th, 2021, and it was filmed. So if you're interested in watching it, there's so many hours of footage. I provided the Court TV link in the show notes. She was tried in Boone County. The prosecution laid out a good case against her. The affairs, the spa, the money problems, and others testifying to what a kind-hearted, hard-working, sweet man Ben was. They also showed communication in which it was obvious that there had been no abuse taking place in their relationship, rather Ben expressing concern that they weren't having sex anymore.
Wow, that is so crazy. Mm-hmm.
For court, Lindley completely changed her appearance. She made herself look small in oversized clothing. She stopped dyeing her hair, took out her piercings, and wore no makeup. She testified that Michael had been the one to shoot Ben, and not her, and that she'd actually been the one to scream and run outside. So her story was that Michael brought the gun, and Michael had killed Ben. The jury did not believe that she didn't kill her husband. And in this case, interestingly enough, the jury would decide both the verdict and the sentence. They found her guilty of murder in the second degree.
In the second degree?
In the second degree.
How so?
I'll get into their reasoning as to why.
Okay.
She received 13 years for the murder sentence and 3 for the armed criminal action, which they also found her guilty of. 16 years. She only got 16 years, and Michael Humphrey got life in prison.
I don't understand that.
Well, the people in the courtroom were shocked. They couldn't believe it. If she got parole, she'd be out in 11 years. The jury claimed that Lindley did not kill Ben with cool reflection. So what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? Can you tell me?
I'll tell you.
Do it right now.
Well, in criminal law, cool reflection is a term used to describe the time it takes for a person to calm down, think clearly after being provoked or experiencing a stressful situation. This time allows the person to consider the consequences of their actions and make rational decisions. Cool reflection is obviously important in cases of homicide, especially first-degree homicide, when determining if someone acted in anger or with premeditation. What?
Oh, come on.
There is so much premeditation. She tried to kill him before. She tried to poison him.
Yes. And also having these other men in her life, she was, I don't want to say grooming, but I guess it is. She was grooming them. Yes, she was fishing for someone to do her dirty work.
To hurt her husband because of what a monster he was. And then she isn't just the fact of contacting Michael Humphrey, asking him if he would kill her husband. Is that not premeditation?
I would think it is, but I'm not an expert.
And even in the moment.
I'm shocked.
Because I get upset about the school reflection thing.
Yeah, as am I.
The way that Michael Humphrey explained it, she shot him once. He ran outside, and then she shot him again. Is there not time to reflect in between those shots?
Well, the first shot there's a possibility that the first shot could have killed him, right?
It might have been to the back, because he had two shots to the back and one to the head.
Right, so then she shoots him again, which...
Twice.
Which I think that's... what's the word I'm looking for? Like, a second shot is you making sure they're dead.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is no cool reflections, my butt. You know?
I know.
Like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It's actually a very shocking verdict in sentencing.
I can't wrap my brain around that, though. Wow.
She had an appeal came up in 2023, and then she turned it down because she knows she's going to get out in 11 years. And to end this... Sad. Sam now has to celebrate his birthday on his own.
Yeah. I know, because there's no other family. Oh,
and
that's really sad.
Yeah. And Lindley's sentencing will hopefully be the last tragedy the Rennick family will have to suffer.
Yeah, this family needs a break.
Yeah. How many tragedies? It's insanity.
It's really sad. I feel so bad for Sam. I feel bad for everybody. Well, yeah. I feel bad for the brothers. I feel bad for the father. I feel bad for the mother. Jeez.
All the children involved.
Oh, my God. Okay, way to make my day just full of sadness.
I know, I'm really
Thank
sorry.
You very much for that.
Hopefully, Sam and Allie can move on with their children. I hope they get to have a relationship with their niece. But I hope they get to move on in happiness without the burden of the property and... You know, good will come to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's another thing, too, before we end this. Cool reflections. Did she ever think that by her doing this, she would leave her kids as orphans, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how about that? You literally took out, you killed their father, and now you're locked up for, you know, killing their dad. So now their kids are just parentless. Good job.
It's a really sad case.
I'm angry. And sad at the same time.
Sorry to make you angry and sad tonight.
That's all right.
And I'm sure everyone else is angry and sad as well.
Cool reflections.
I know. It's bizarre. What the heck were you thinking, jury? We want to know what you think about this case.
Yeah, let us know.
Because this is a crazy one. But before we go, we want to say thank you to our new Patreon supporters. Rachel T., Rebecca Zinmeyer, Ashley, Nicole DeCarafil, Anita Suze, Katie Strilinger, Diane Tal, Julie Martz, Martine Beaumont, Mac McCanda, Melissa Moore, Kayla Salvato, Erin, Jen Stabe, Corinne Cogden, Shonda Day, Leah Peters, Shanna Kelly, L, Diane Barnes Fox, Sandy Farley, Helen Hume, Shane Steele, Leah, Vicky Epter Pledge, Cassie Hanna, and Robin Johnson. Thank you so much for joining Patreon, and we hope you're enjoying the extra episodes. And until next time, guys. Don't park next to vans.
Bye, guys.
Bye.